Welcome back again to the BadQuaker.com podcast. This is episode 36 for October 19th, 2011. I couldn't remember what month it was. It's like, okay, hold on. Let me figure this out. There's January, February. Okay, so we are now, this, if the sound sounds a little bit different, maybe a little bit more tinny or echoey, we're in our new Bad Quaker offices, high in the
towering metropolis.
In the towering penthouse of the Bad Quaker, in the penthouse of the Bad Quaker Towers. There we go. The penthouse of the Bad Quaker Towers, which means no longer are we deep in the underground lair of the Bad Quaker compound.
And we moved today because deep in the underground lair there is official anarchy laundry being done.
Yes.
Official Bad Quaker anarchy laundry.
So what that means is underground lair means basement. Tower penthouse means we're upstairs in an empty bedroom. That's why it sounds echoey, because it's pretty much empty. It's not really empty. We have, this is like our secondary pantry up here, but anyway. We won't talk about food hoarding today, nor our stash of massive apocalyptic food storage.
And light bulbs! Light bulbs!
Lots of light bulbs. Light bulbs are going to be illegal. If you don't already know that, starting in 2012, thank you, Congress, specific types of light bulbs will no longer be for sale in the U.S. So,
And just out of curiosity, when did they start making those come out, laws?
Well, oddly enough, the company that sponsored the legislation that stopped the old style light bulbs from being first they stopped manufacturing them in the U.S. and then now starting in 2012 you can't sell them in the U.S. But that same company that lobbied for that bill and that series of laws is the same company, oddly enough, the single distributor of the curly environmental green light bulbs that we're supposed to all run to that are filled with mercury and sometimes
so
catch on fire.
The owner of the patent for the new light bulbs passed legislation to put the old light bulbs out of business.
Yeah. In case we have some noise that, like, you might have just now heard, we have critters running around up here since we're not able to isolate ourselves in the basement.
Underbelly, the lair.
So that's fascism. So the company that stands to make the most from the new product, because it owns the single state-authorized production, is the same company that pushed the legislation through to outlaw the old product, which anybody could manufacture.
And why was there anything odd about the timing of the new light bulbs coming out?
Yeah, it just so happened that the old the same company that holds the new patent on the new product used to hold the old patent on the old product, but then it lost that patent because it was like 100 years old, and all kinds of companies were making these light bulbs and all kinds of other companies were making money off of them, and we can't have that. We have to have state monopolies. Have I done the that's fascism yet? Have I said
that's
that yet?
That's fascism. By the way, I don't think we actually introduced ourselves.
Oh, that's right. I'm Ben.
And I'm Kai. So if you're new to the podcast, that's who we are. And again, you can't see my hands pointing at each other.
Okay, so I have a few notes. We might, sometimes when we do these podcasts, we have notes, sometimes we don't.
Like last week, there were no notes involved.
Yeah, we should have had notes. That was the infamous
Armadillo podcast.
Armadillo podcast. Sometimes we have notes and ignore them. Sometimes we have notes and then we actually go contrary to what the notes mean. We get halfway into it and change our minds. But there is one thing I wanted to mention. Just, this is a thought that popped into my head. I like to play the card game Free Cell on computers. I started playing FreeCell when it first appeared in Windows programs years ago. And I was like pretty much everybody else, I think. I would just play it, and you win and you lose, and no big deal one way or the other. And that went on for years, literally for years. And then about, I guess it was around, 97 or 98 or so, I was talking to some friends in the aircraft industry. And you get a bunch of aircraft geeky engineer types all in rooms with computers, and they figure out some odd things. So I was having a conversation with this individual, and he noticed that I was playing FreeCell and assumed that I was a FreeCell geek. And so he starts spouting off information about FreeCell, and he says the name of this one number. All the FreeCell games are numbered. Mm-hmm. And he says this one number, this FreeCell number. He says, "Have you tried that game?" And I'm like, "The games have numbers? I didn't even know that they, I mean, you know, I didn't know that they were."
Right.
I thought it was just a random number that was assigned to the game. And evidently each game, even though all the games, there's only a set quantity of games, like I don't know what the number is, it's like 3 times 10 to the 86th power or some crazy thing like that.
Mm-hmm.
And of all those games, they're all assigned numbers, but only something like, I don't know the number, but only a certain amount of that vast quantity mm-hmm. is actually in the Microsoft product.
Mm-hmm.
And so evidently these geeks have found the one game that can't be solved. Or at least, they don't even say can't be solved. They say hasn't been solved. And evidently, there are programmers who have sat down and spent hours and hours and hours and hours writing algorithms, is that the
mm-hmm.
right word?
Yeah.
That just crunch the numbers of FreeCell to find out if games can be beat or not. And so far, they can't determine if that one game can't be beat. They just say it hasn't been beat yet. So, I've already made the story longer than it needed to be, but this was an entirely new thing that was presented to me. The concept that all the FreeCell games could be beat. I never thought of it. I thought it was like regular solitaire,
right?
Where the vast majority of solitaire games cannot be beat.
Right.
So if you're playing a game and you know, you're going into it to begin with, you know that you only have like a 30% chance of winning. Well, then when you lose every third time, you lose 2 out of 3 times.
Right.
You're perfectly comfortable with that.
It's right.
Like, well, this is what I expect.
Right.
So,
because when you randomly shuffle the cards and you randomly deal them out, sometimes they legitimately can't be beaten.
Right.
You know, they don't land in the correct spots, and you can't get to the cards that mm-hmm. you need to in order to actually beat it.
In regular solitaire games.
Right.
So I thought FreeCell was like that. And then this new piece of information comes to me that, indeed, every game can be beaten. So then having this new information that every game can be beaten, it changed my outlook on FreeCell altogether. So starting at that point, when I would open a FreeCell game, I wouldn't play it.
Mm-hmm.
I would just imagine in my mind and start following through the steps of the game to see what brought you to a dead end
mm-hmm.
and what brought you to victory. And so it probably took about, I'm going to make a wild guess. I'm going to say I may have played with that in my mind without actually playing the game. Open one mm-hmm. and just watch it and figure it out and then try it. I probably played with that for 6 or 8 months before I got to the point of where now I can open a FreeCell game. And if there are no outside interruptions, I can just play it right through mm-hmm. and beat it.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes I'll sit and stare at it for 5 or 10 minutes before I make a move. But typically, I can look at it for a few minutes and figure it out and then just run the sequence through.
Mm-hmm.
And so, like, before I left GE, when I was still there, maybe that's not a good thing to admit. it's not like it's hidden. If the bosses wanted to know, it was right there on the computer. I think the last computer that was mine at GE at my office, It had something like 4,000 wins and like 3 losses or something. And the reason it had a loss is because I would play at a time that I got interrupted and I just had to shut it down. And I couldn't just leave it and walk away from it.
Right.
And then one of the computers that I fried downstairs several years back had like 2,000 or 3,000 wins and no losses. Mm-hmm. The one main computer that's down in the basement now, I think it has 2 losses on it. Because of similar situations where I got interrupted or I fell asleep in the middle of one, you know, something like that. But I think it's like, I think it has like 1500 in sequential, what's it called?
Consecutive?
Yeah, that's not the word they use, but that's correct. Anyway, it has like 1500 or something, then the one or two that I messed up, and then like another 1,200, 1,500 or something in a row. Now, that's not just bragging. That's a lot of effort. I went through a lot of talking and the purpose of that was not to display my greatness in free cell. My purpose.
No, the purpose was to say he has a lot of free time on his hands.
Well, it was very therapeutic when dealing with a brain injury to go through that and be able to reteach my brain how to think like that. It was very therapeutic. That's a positive thing too. That's a second reason to bring this topic up. For chronic brain injuries, repetitious exercises like that are really good for your brain.
Right.
Almost lost the ability to read after a brain injury.
Yeah, and he decided the first way to begin reading again was to read The Lord of the Rings. Maybe she started with like Hop on Pop or Left Foot, Right Foot.
Yeah, so once you start going through reading the
Salmonella.
Oh no, there's a chicken involved.
Silmarillion.
So once you start reading that, like the fourth or fifth time, you actually get to where you can read again. You may not be able to think straight. You start seeing dragons flying in the air. But
maybe we shouldn't start kids reading off at like a low level. Just toss them the Silmarillion and go sink or swim, kid.
Yeah. So you're starting the first grade? Yeah. Well, here's War and Peace. You can graduate when you can read it. Anyway, back to my long, boring story about free cell. So, now I want to relate free cell to the state. There are lots of people who see the problems in government, and they see the problems with the state. They see the problems in the market, where the state has interfered with the market. They see the problems on Wall Street. They see the problems with the Federal Reserve. They see the inefficiency of Congress, and they see how everything Congress touches, they make it worse. And they think, you know, they are in agreement with us to say, this is a failed system. This system is seriously flawed. But the problem is, there are these series of lifeboats that they say, well, you know, if we could just get to the Constitution, or if we could just shrink government to this extent, or if we just had government only do these things for us. And so they keep holding on to these state lifeboats because somehow they think in their minds, this game, you know, we need to keep playing it until we win it, this state game. Mm-hmm. But the problem is, the state is not like free cell. The state is like playing blackjack against the house.
Right.
I used to love it when I was, I used to play cards all the time. I used to gamble all the time. I don't have a particular reason that I stopped, other than that it stopped being convenient and nobody would play with me.
They can't call it gambling. They're not legally allowed to call it gambling. It's gaming.
Yeah.
Because there's no gamble involved.
Yeah. Well, there's not in house blackjack. The house has a specific level of advantage in the game. It's built into the game. So one player and another player, let's say you have 5 players in the house. Mm-hmm. So among these 5 players, 3 or 4 of them may make money.
Right.
But some will consistently lose money, but the house will always make money.
Right.
So when you play this, so the state is not like free cell. The state is like playing against the house.
Right.
You may have temporary wins, but in the long run, the house will always win.
Right.
and the state being the case that the state will always fail. It may have temporary runs. Some of those temporary runs may last 1,000 years. You know, right. Rome was around 1,000 years. The state in China has lasted a very extended period of time because they had such a large pool of hosts that the parasite could live off of.
Mm-hmm.
But no matter how long you play the game, eventually at some point the parasites are going to kill the host.
Right.
So the game of the state cannot
and,
be won.
And actually, the parasite is a pretty good metaphor because it's kind of like the flu virus. Because as soon as you have a flu, you're immune to that flu virus.
Or it kills you.
Right.
If you get a certain type of a virus, it will either cause immunity or it will kill you.
Right. And then, you know, the virus just mutates into a new form and it reinfects you.
Yeah.
You know, you can get the flu every year, but every year you get immune to that flu virus.
Mm-hmm.
But it just reincarnates as a new virus.
And so back to the card thing. You're trying to steal my cards with your whole virus rant.
We won't get into that.
Viruses and spiders. Now that was a mean tease.
That was a mean tease.
Okay, so anyway, on the other hand, freedom, liberty, libertarianism, anarchy. This is a game that can be won.
Mm-hmm.
Every scenario has a solution.
Mm-hmm.
You may not, if you pop up a free sell game and you look at it, and even if you make a move or two,
mm-hmm.
you may not see that it's winnable.
Mm-hmm.
You may think, well, what are we going to do about roads, or what are we going to do about public water,
mm-hmm.
or how would a company distribute electricity if the government weren't there to begin with to help things get started or to
mm-hmm.
set the regulations? So any particular game that you're looking at, any particular scenario in the free cell that you're looking at, the solution may not be obvious, but as in anarchy, there is a solution.
Right.
It's just a matter of letting the market work that out. And that's the thing about the market. If you can come up with a problem, humans are incredible. If you can come up with a problem, the market, made up of billions of humans, the market can solve that problem.
Mm-hmm. 'Cause humans have this weird thing in our heads that we can't leave something undone.
Yeah.
We have to, and we can't, you know, we're puzzle solvers.
Yeah.
We have to. It drives the human race crazy to have something that we can't get to, something that we can't do.
That's the part of the brain that makes you, when you look at a cloud, it forces you to translate that cloud into something recognizable.
Yeah.
So you see the cloud and you're like, oh, it looks like a rabbit. Now it looks like a puppy. Now it looks like an alligator.
No, it looks like a cloud. But your brain can't just let it be. It
has to analyze it.
We cannot deal with randomness.
Mm-hmm.
We can't. It drives us nuts. You know, any other animal in the world
mm-hmm.
goes, okay, I can reach these fruit. I'll eat these fruit. I can't reach those. Let those go.
Mm-hmm.
Not humans. We have to be like, I'm going to get those.
Yeah.
I will die if I don't get those. I'm going to figure out how to get every single
mm-hmm.
fruit off that tree.
And the interesting thing is, not only will we figure out a way to get to the fruit in the tree, we'll figure out how to make the tree shorter so it brings the fruit down to us. I mean, that's the way our brain works. We're like, we'll just keep messing with it until pretty soon that fruit will be right down here where I can reach it. You know, and
you know what? I don't like the fact that this fruit doesn't taste very good. And rather than go pick that other fruit, I'm going to make this fruit taste better.
If it takes me 700 generations of this tree. So that's an amazing thing about humans, but that's like free cell. If you know ahead of time this game can be won, you can beat it.
Mm-hmm.
Well, then you can go into the free cell game with a whole different set of thinking.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how anarchy is. If you understand that for anything, any problem that presents itself to the market can solve that solution if you trust the market to do so. But if you go in and you're like, what? Roads? Well, I don't know how that one's done. And so you just close it out and you gave up.
Mm-hmm.
Well, That's not the human way. That's not human nature.
Right.
That's one more step to show that the state is against human nature.
Right.
It's unnatural. Okay, did we kill that one?
Yes.
I can get that whole free cell thing out of my mind now.
Out of your obsessive humanoid mind.
I've solved the free cell.
That not only can he not handle having a free cell game open without solving it, he can't handle having free cell without metaphorizing it.
Let me compare free cells to ducks. No. Another thing that I wanted to talk about was I keep seeing this. Different people in different parts of the political spectre are analyzing the current political situation.
Spectre. Intentionally? Woo, it's a spectrum. Spectrum is a broad range of things, and a specter is a ghost.
Well, the political, that could fit. It's a hobgoblin. Spectrum.
Palette.
I did make it clear that I've had brain injuries, right? Okay, so in the entire palette of the political realm, there's a lot of people from a lot of different directions that are seeing what some are calling the end of the American empire. Mm-hmm. Others are seeing the possible collapse of the dollar. Mm-hmm. Others are seeing a shift, a global shift away from the dollar and towards some kind of international monetary system. Mm-hmm. These are people from the left and the right, and libertarians and anarchists, and even non-political people are starting to see the vulnerability of the American system.
Words are hard.
And also the insustainability. Why was all the big words today? Let's go back to the hop on top. Anyway, the instability of the American empire. We can't have 750,000 soldiers policing the world on our check, on our with us paying for it forever.
Right.
This is not a sustainable thing. We can't be occupying literally, what are we at, like 150 countries we're occupying now? Mm-hmm. I don't even know how many. I used to keep up with this.
We're occupying more countries than people are occupying cities in the United States.
It's crazy. So it's not hard to see the writing on the wall and see that this is going to, at some point, unravel. And what I'm hearing people talking about, and these are people like survivalist types, these are left-wing people, these are the Occupy,
you know. Insert city here.
All these people are all seeing all the signs of a collapse of Western influence, or perhaps if you want to think of it as the American Empire or the American system. And I think mistakenly, a lot of anarchists and some libertarians are being fooled by this, by thinking that the collapse of the American system or the collapse of the American empire equates the collapse of the state.
Right.
And this is really, really dangerously flawed. Mm-hmm. It's wrong. The state will exist far after the government of the United States of America collapses on itself.
In fact, I personally think that there cannot be the state as an entity cannot go away until it's actually reached its fullness.
Right.
And I don't think that's going to happen until it's global.
Yeah.
Because, you know, going back to the virus metaphor, the state, the way that the state is kept alive is by infecting new people. And
I knew you'd take us back to the virus. We're going to do spiders, aren't we?
No spiders. The way that it infects is it gets a new group of people to steal from, because the people that it has, it steals from them until they are dependent on the state,
mm-hmm.
and then the state is dependent on the people that are dependent on the state, and so then it has to go steal more people.
Yeah. So it's constantly building up a reserve of useless people that live off of the state.
Right.
And it constantly has to go and infect new people.
Right. And I don't think that it's going to collapse down and be done
mm-hmm.
until it has done that to everyone.
Yeah, it has to reach its saturation point.
Right.
And that's a global saturation point.
Right.
It's not in an individual country. It's often argued, you mentioned this before too, when we were talking about this once, you said that it's often argued that if you have one country, one geographic area,
mm-hmm.
that is a fully functional anarcho-capitalist society where everything is the way that we all dream for it to be, then another state would just invade it.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, that's mm-hmm. right. That's one of the things that people say, well, that's why you can't have anarchy because of that. Yeah, that's right. That's what the state has done for thousands of years.
And that's why, you know, along with the ideas that you can't fight the state using the state's tools,
yeah.
that's also one of the reasons why it's really useless to try to throw out the state.
Mm-hmm.
Because that leaves a power void that another state is just going to come and fill.
Yeah, it's like taking a bucket of water out of the ocean.
Right.
As soon as you scoop it out, it's right back again.
Right. And the only thing that you can do is wait for it to die.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
I had a thought. Rats. You know, thoughts arrive like butterflies. But I don't know. So I chase them away.
Thanks, Eddie.
I'm sorry. That just... Again, when you have a brain injury, when you're dealing with chronic brain injuries... Are we going to have to name this podcast the Brain Injury Podcast?
We should have a theme for every... No, this is going to end up being the Spider Podcast.
This is
and
the Spider.
You're going to make it. I promise you that. And we're going to get Alex Jones. We're going to get all of the crazy people that are going to be like latching on. Oh, look, they're crazy too. Because we're going to go into the spiders and it's going to happen.
Well, before we do that, let me take us back to the collapse of the American Empire not being a sign of the collapse of the state. Another thing that it was something that the people that are commenting on this are commenting on is that what we've been seeing systematically for, you know, at least all of 2011, maybe longer than that, but it's becoming really obvious in 2011. All this year, you see these announcements in the news that, like, the city of Oakland, California, no longer will the police respond to this list of complaints.
Mm-hmm.
No longer will the police respond to, in I think it was San Francisco, they no longer respond to silent alarms.
Mm-hmm.
Well, what good is a silent alarm if it doesn't call the cops, if the cops don't show up?
Kind of point.
Yeah. And other cities are taking similar measures. They're having to cut back what the cops respond to, and even to the point where some cities, some districts are cutting back on what district attorneys will prosecute. So some district attorneys won't prosecute things like domestic violence. Now, honestly, you got this drunken man beating his wife, and the cops are not going to respond to that, and if the cops respond, the DA is not going to prosecute it.
Mm-hmm.
Now, all these people who argue, well, we have to have the state in order to keep the peace. If the state's not functioning in its basic form,
mm-hmm.
then why do you need the state to tell you what the haircut regulations are?
Mm-hmm.
Or whether or not somebody is allowed to weave hair in South Florida.
Or whether you can have a lemonade stand.
Yeah.
If you can't...
I can't grow vegetables in my front yard, but it's okay if I beat my wife?
Yeah.
The city's going to come and give me a citation if I have vegetables in my front yard, but if I beat my wife, hey, that's cool. We're good with that.
Yeah.
Is that what the state is coming to? I think this really punches massive holes in the arguments of not only the statists themselves, but the minarchists mm-hmm. as well. Because if you start boiling the state down, you say, well, we have to cut back, we have to cut back. And I heard one person talk about this. He says... the topic was whether or not firefighters, because here's another trend. localities, not so much the big cities, but localities, counties and smaller cities, and you know, in some parts of the country where they have parishes, or some areas they have townships or whatever.
Some places they have all of the above.
Yeah. Some of those areas are cutting back on what are called essential services. Mm-hmm. So things like they're laying off firemen, they're laying off EMTs and ambulance attendants and emergency personnel like that. They're laying off cops. Mm-hmm. And they're saying, well, we have to cut back on essential services.
Right.
We're still going to fine you for your lemonade stand, but we're not going to help you when you need CPR.
We're going to arrest you if you're growing a particular plant, mm-hmm, and smoking it.
Yeah, well, that's a good excuse to confiscate your house, though. Right. So.
But we're not going to help you if your house is on fire.
Yeah. And so the individuals that I was listening to discussing this, the one person that was speaking was a professional emergency medical technician. And he was presenting the argument that the communities, this is crazy to, mm-hmm, cut back here when you've got other things you can cut back on. Mm-hmm. How many people on city council are making, you know, six-digit incomes, and you're cutting back the EMTs?
Right.
How could that possibly make sense?
What I find really, really amusing is that when the statist is presented with this problem, mm-hmm, you know, you believe in the state, yes. You believe that the state has to perform these functions, yes. But the state can't perform these functions. Therefore, we need the state,
yeah,
to perform these functions. And they will literally flat out tell you, see, this is why we can't have anarchy.
Yeah. It's the do loop that I talked about, yeah, in one article. It's like, you know, if A equals B, then go to C.
Right.
If otherwise, go to A.
Yeah.
So you go like A plus B doesn't equal C, then go to A. Okay, A plus B doesn't equal C, then go to A.
Yeah.
Plus B doesn't equal C, then go to A.
Yeah.
Ah!
Yeah.
Stop, break that, knock it off.
Yeah. Because, I mean, we have a situation where, you know, the government can't provide these services. And so the result of that is that clearly the government has to provide these services. What? What? And people get all up in arms if you, like, suggest that, hey, maybe we should privatize firefighters. Mm-hmm. Oh, no, we can't do that. We can't do that.
Well, in the conversation that I was listening to, because I wasn't a part of the conversation, I was just listening to it. And the two people were talking about this. And the one guy was taking the position that it doesn't matter. These things are going to be cut back because, mm-hmm, the city can't, all these cities, all of them, and all these communities, they are going bankrupt, or they are already bankrupt, and they,
right,
just haven't actually, you know, it hasn't taken place. But bankruptcy is facing them, and they will cut back.
Right.
It is going to happen.
Right.
It's not a matter of what should or shouldn't. It's happening, and it's going to continue to happen.
Mm-hmm.
And the other person is like, you can't cut back these essential services. They're essential.
Mm-hmm.
And so then they come to this point where the discussion becomes, well, you know, then you have to have volunteers.
Mm-hmm.
And volunteers are not professionals.
Mm-hmm.
So in the case of the EMT, what his point was, you may be able to get a volunteer to drive the fire truck, mm-hmm, or to drive the ambulance, but the volunteer is not going to have the level of professionalism that someone who does this for a living.
Mm-hmm.
So this EMT, he says, he says, if you count up the amount of time I've spent in school, I have as much time in school as a doctor.
Mm-hmm.
And my education within the area of medicine that I practice,
mm-hmm,
is as specialized as a doctor.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you're going to take that away and just have some volunteer come in that might know how to do CPR, and that's about it.
Mm-hmm.
This is what's called a false dichotomy.
Mm-hmm.
I got that word right. That was right off the top of my head. I didn't have to read it or nothing.
I remembered it.
But that's what a false dichotomy is. It's like, okay, now what would you like? I can punch you in the nose, or I can punch you in the chin.
Right.
I don't want to be punched.
Right.
How about you don't punch me?
Right.
Well, no, that's not in the choices.
Right.
Okay, so...
And people have this, like, you can't make people pay for these services. You are already making people pay for these services. involuntarily. You are stealing money from them and paying for these services. Not well. Because they haven't stopped stealing money from people.
Uh-huh.
They're stealing the same. They're stealing more money from people.
And they're still cutting the services.
And they can't afford to pay for the services.
Oh.
And so I almost don't know what to respond to people when they say, but you can't make people pay for these services. Because it's like, where do you think the money comes from? Do we have money trees that we just pick? How do you think these services get paid for? They get paid for by people. I would rather go, you know what? I don't think I have a fear of having my house burned down.
Mm.
But I have a fear of getting robbed. I'm going to buy theft insurance,
mm-hmm.
and I'm going to hire a private security firm to come in and put private security on my house.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't necessarily worry about fires, because mm-hmm. we've had an inspection, and we've never been known to burn the house down, so I'm not going to buy fire.
Mm-hmm.
And so, if I don't pay in advance, the fire happens. And I call the fire department, and they come out, they put out the fire, and then they bill me.
Mm-hmm.
And that's my choice,
mm-hmm.
because I didn't prepay.
Mm-hmm.
And if you prepay for the fire insurance, they come out, and they put out
your
fire.
There's a risk analysis,
yeah.
and they the market drives to a price balance.
Mm-hmm.
And now, that as opposed to a different system, let's just imagine a system here. Let's just pretend.
As opposed to the system we have now, where you are forcibly paying for the
it's okay, Nikki.
The fire service. Oh, Nikki's all frustrated with this too.
Anyway, so
yeah.
So let's imagine a scenario. We have a guy who's going to sell a process to a community. So he comes in, he gets out all his whiteboard and everything, and he's going to sell this process to a community. So this is how it works.
Monorail.
That one should, most people should get that one. That was a pretty popular episode of The Simpsons. Anyway, so this guy sets up his whiteboard, and he gets all of his props, and he gets everything all ready, and he starts his sales pitch. And he says, okay, here's how it's going to work. Now, what we want to provide is fire, ambulance, emergency medical mm-hmm. services, and police protection to mm-hmm. your community.
Mm-hmm.
So here's how it's going to work. Everybody in the community is going to pay according to what we decide their house is worth.
Mm-hmm.
They're going to pay a percentage every year, repeated, of what we decide their house is worth. And we get to decide that each year.
Mm-hmm.
And we can change that anytime we want.
Right. Not necessarily based on any...
Yeah, it just however we feel like
right.
doing it. And then what we're going to do, of course, if you don't pay that, we'll take your house.
Right.
Now, so we take as much money as we want from you under threat of taking your house mm-hmm. if you don't pay. Then what we do with this money is for every one policeman
mm-hmm.
and for every one firefighter and for every one EMT, we'll have about 300 to 600 bureaucratic appointees
mm-hmm.
and at least 3 or 4 elected officials
mm-hmm.
that are all going to earn wages before it gets to the EMT or the fireman or the cop.
Mm-hmm.
So this is the system we're going to have. First off, we're going to extort under threat of violence. And if somebody wants to try to defend their house, we have a SWAT team for that.
Mm-hmm. That we're going to pay via this money that we've stolen.
The extorted money. So here's the process. We have, we're going to stick a gun to people's head, threaten to kill them if they don't pay, and we'll extort the money from all the property owners in town. And then we'll take that money and we'll run it through massive bloated bureaucracies. And then we'll provide a very small fraction of these publics, we'll call them public services,
mm-hmm.
because that's a very comfortable phrase.
Mm-hmm.
Public service sounds a lot better than mafia protection.
Right.
So we'll call it public service. Now, that's one business model that we can present to a community. The other business model we can present to a community, Let's see, how many people does it take to run a fire department for a small community? Well, let's just assume that for this particular make-believe community, one ladder truck, one pumper truck, mm-hmm. and one EMT, it's not really an ambulance, but it's a mm-hmm. it's a truck equipped for emergency medical technicians. So, and now we have, let's say, because we're going to need more than one shift, mm-hmm. so let's say we have a grand total of 75 professionals, mm-hmm. paid professionals, mm-hmm. not volunteers. Volunteers are not a part of the argument, mm-hmm. okay? Take the volunteer argument and take your force and your aggression and take your false dichotomy and take those outside with your whiteboard for a minute.
Right.
This is real life.
Because I always find it funny when you have a community and you say, okay, well, this community, despite the fact that we're stealing from the public, we can't afford to have a fire department.
We want you
so
to volunteer.
So we're going to have a volunteer fire department. And if you don't volunteer, your house will just burn.
Yeah. That's not at all a threat, is
that's,
it?
That's not volunteering. What part of that equation is volunteer? What part of, if you don't do this service,
your house is going to
burn down? That's the textbook definition of not volunteering.
So in our second model, we have, how many did I say?
75.
75. So we have 75 full-time professional employees paid well. Paid a competitive wage. Mm-hmm. Whatever that is, the market will settle that question.
Because we have no way of knowing
that. We have no way of knowing that, but the market will settle and decide what a competitive wage is.
Quickly.
In addition to that, for 75 employees, now I'm going to be realistic on this because I have ran businesses and I know what you're going to need. For 75 employees, you're going to need at least two people to handle payroll and bookkeeping. Mm-hmm. And you're going to need, for 75 active employees, you're going to need at least three managers.
Mm-hmm. And including the fact that they're going to be there on a shift where they're going to need to be fed and they're going to need to have, lodging.
But they can do a lot of that for themselves, but that will be expenses. Mm-hmm. And your frontline supervisors can be part of that fighting force, mm-hmm. so to speak. Although we hope they won't be fighting it. It's according to how the neighboring community is. No. anyway, so we're looking at 75 on the ground, two bookkeeping types, mm-hmm. to handle payroll. We're going to have, what did I say, three managers? Mm-hmm. Three managers.
Mechanics.
We're going to need probably at least two full-time mechanics. So, math. Oh, rats. 75 plus 2 plus 3 plus 3 is 83. So we're at 83 now. Okay. And we're going to need a dispatcher, mm-hmm. for each shift. Mm-hmm. So we're going to need three dispatchers. So now we're at 86. Let's just be really free with this. We're going to need about 100 employees. Mm-hmm. We're going to need about 100 employees.
For a small town.
For a town that would have one ladder truck, mm-hmm. one pumper, one ambulance EMT unit. And that's it. Now, what's going to cost more? That structure with where if those guys are not doing their job, mm-hmm. in an efficient manner, then the fire company that's serving the next town over will go, we can do that. Mm-hmm. We can take that over. Mm-hmm. And so those guys will know that the competition will exist. And that will drive them. That competition will drive them.
Outdoor hanging on other people's neighborhoods.
Yeah. Bill's fire department. We're way better than Tom's fire department.
We'll put out your fire in 30 minutes or less, or it's free.
Yeah, guaranteed. But you would have competition. Mm-hmm. The market would drive competition. And there would be innovations. Like, there would be firefighters who would have today.
Or we're going about this with the assumption that firefighting would need to be in the same way that firefighting is now, where they come in and they spray massive tons of water.
Right.
But not necessarily, because you may call up a professional where they install a fire suppression system in your house.
Yeah.
You know, there's really no way of telling how the market is going to take it,
mm-hmm.
because the market was removed from it so long ago that we're fighting fires right now the same way we were fighting fires in
1700s. Here's another thing too. Think about this. Right now, the U.S. Department of is it Fish and Game, or I'm not sure. No, it's probably Interior or whoever it is. They have these fleets of aircraft, and whenever there's a big forest fire, they take those and they fill them with water, and they have some that can actually fly over lakes and fill up and then take back off again. Mm-hmm. And they go out and they dump this water out over forest fires. Well, what would the free market be like if we had a free market in firefighting?
Right.
And all of a sudden, a guy's like, you know what? There's a warehouse fire in wherever, Cleveland, mm-hmm. Camden, Chicago, wherever. There's a warehouse fire. And three independent tanker owners are like, I'll be there in 15 minutes.
Right.
And instead of taking, you know, the firefighters on the ground, they may take a half an hour to dump X quantity of water on this fire in a stream, you know, the size of your arm.
Mm-hmm.
They may take a certain time frame, and this plane can fly over and in one drop more water than they can drop in hours.
Right.
You know? Well, now what's the competition like?
Right.
If I can own a local helicopter, and part of the time I'm running EMT services with my helicopter, but when I get the right call, I just hook on the water thing and drop off the emergency pod, the rescue pod, pick up the water pod, fly over, and drop, you know, 10,000 gallons or whatever on a house fire.
Yep.
And how fast would that knock it down?
Yeah.
Well, how is the helicopter dude going to compare price-wise in market competition with a guy with a truck? I don't know. I don't know, because there's no way of knowing. We're back to the free cell thing. I can't make this up, because I can't envision it.
Right.
Because I don't have...
we don't have all the cards on the table.
Yeah, exactly.
It's like trying to play the game when you see one row of cards, and you're trying to imagine what the rest of the cards are going to be.
And the reason why you can't see the rest of the cards?
It's because you have the state standing there going, no, you can't look at this.
Yeah. I own that card. Wait, how can I play the game if you're holding that card?
And that was mine, and you can't touch that one.
If you have a permit, you can move this card. Yeah. It takes 6 months to get a permit. It's going to be $300.
Yeah. It's craziness.
Well, that is, you know, that is really how simple the game is, though. If you open your mind back up and you stop forcing yourself to believe the state's false dichotomy, where it gives you these two options, and if you break that loop where it's constantly going back to the state for the answer, the state broke my leg. What's the answer? The state will give you a crutch. If you break that loop and stop having the broken leg and depending on the crutch, then you have the opportunity to look at the game honestly and say, what can really be done about this?
And, you know, it's funny because this is a problem that a lot of libertarians, they get backed into that corner, and a lot of anarchists do too, where people are like, explain to me how this would take place in an anarchy society.
Yeah.
And you're like, there's no guarantee that that would exist.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, like with roads.
Yeah.
There is no guarantee that, I mean, roads are highly inefficient.
Mm-hmm.
The idea that you take your little car and you drive with thousands of other people down this one road, that's... the market would never invent that. That's terrible.
I saw a thing on... I can't remember where I saw this. But there's this guy in England, and he has this car from like 1896 or something like that. It's really, really old. And it's in the time frame before they actually had good functional gasoline engines.
Right.
So it was a one-off.
Because it was a free market, and they weren't sure they were going to go with gas.
Yeah. So it's a one-off vehicle that was handmade, one vehicle, and it's battery-operated. And here's the fun part. It gets the same distance. It can drive the same distance as a Chevy Volt.
Wow.
On a single charge. And it was, I think it was like 1896 or 1899 or something like that when it was produced. And it's been in this guy's garage. He's had it for a long, he's some rich guy in England, and he didn't want to, they showed, in the article that I was reading, they showed the picture of him, and they had the details of what kind of car, who manufactured it, all the stuff. But they, he didn't want to reveal who he was because he's kind of a rich English right. person who likes his privacy and had a really cool house, though. Anyway, so my point in that being that this was before, that vehicle was produced before the state started interfering. Mm-hmm. And now, at some point, it was decided, well, that's not efficient. Mm-hmm. And so the market was pushing in a different direction. But the problem is the state comes in, distorts everything. Mm-hmm. And who knows, like you're saying, who knows, maybe we would have used roads for a period of time. Mm-hmm. Maybe not. Maybe it would have been a very short period of time, maybe a longer period of time. Mm-hmm. There's no way of knowing that because by the time World War I came along, all the states of the world started dumping money into the auto industries. Mm-hmm. And they started distorting the markets.
Yep.
And by the distortion...
And distorting the petroleum industry.
Yeah, the interference... all the interference... Oh, I gotta... When,
I think we've done a podcast yeah, we on have. Petroleum.
But this is a good chance for me to tease for what's coming up. I actually have a time set with Robert Higgs for an interview. We communicated earlier, and we actually have the time set of when the phone call is going to be made, and I'm going to have an interview with Robert Higgs, and I'm so excited. That almost slipped my mind. I can't believe I almost forgot that. This is like, I was really excited to interview Jeffrey Tucker mm-hmm. because I'm a big fan of Jeffrey Tucker's mm-hmm. because I think he's really cool. Mm-hmm. But Robert Higgs...
It's the bow tie. Yeah. Bow ties are cool.
But Robert Higgs is like, I wouldn't have even thought to ask him if his wife hadn't insisted on it. You know, because it's like, well... You know, I might go and talk to somebody about Albert Einstein, but I wouldn't approach Albert Einstein. So, anyway. Oh, I know. So Kai looks at me like, you're talking?
We were talking about something.
So Robert Higgs is an expert on this time frame. So I would love to be able to ask Robert Higgs what he thinks about the possibility of if there had been no state interference in the oil industry around 1900, mm-hmm. and if there had been no state interference in the auto and the airplane industry around 1900 and 1920, with mm-hmm. the massive influence that the states had at the time, I wonder if I'll be able to get him to just make a wild guess as to what kind of technology do you think would have developed? Mm-hmm. I don't know. He may not even play that game because right. that's like, that may be totally childish to him.
If fishes had wings, yeah. then there's an episode of Big Bang Theory, and I know you don't watch the Big Bang Theory. You should because it's hysterical.
Is that on TV?
It is. It's on the TVs. But it's also on the internets.
Oh, they have TV on the internet?
They do. Yeah. They have TV on the internets now.
I might lower myself then.
But they have this one episode where they've made this game where they have, you know, it's the game of theories. So, you know, if... a pomegranate had fallen on Albert Einstein's head instead of an apple, or not Albert Newton. Einstein's, Newton's head instead of an apple, then what color would ducks be now? And you have to, like, you have to come up with the answer, and then you have to justify the answer. And it's really, really funny.
The butterfly effect.
Yeah. But that's that whole, you know, crazy theories about mm-hmm. how time would wind if little tiny things were changed.
Mm-hmm. That did you ever see the movie Butterfly Effect?
I did not.
I don't know that I would recommend it, but it's weird. It's interesting in ways. It plays with your mind because that's what happens in the movie. Mm-hmm. You have like one thing happens and then you have the result of all that and mm-hmm. then the person can back up mm-hmm. and try again. And he keeps messing things up and messing things up and messing things up. And it just and little things happen. And he's like, oh, no, got to go back. Mm-hmm. But like I say, I'm not sure I would recommend it. It was, an like exercise.
The Simpsons episode where he keeps going back.
I think that might have been what they based that on, or what they may have based the Simpsons episode on, is the and probably the original book of, of that. But yeah, but that, except even more bizarre than the Simpsons, you know. But it is an interesting thought to think what would have happened, what would we have right now if it weren't for the influence of the state, if it weren't for the, I shouldn't say influence, interference, if
right.
it weren't for the interference of the
and
state.
And I think it's interesting to think, because we are at a point right now where, you know, innovation is happening so quickly, and I really think that we're going to see in the next 10 to 15, maybe 20 years, the state is going to start stopping that.
Because it's already getting pretty scared of it.
Yeah, because that's...
You see that in the, across the things in Africa where the state started trying to crack down on stuff.
And, right, and I mean, we're seeing it here too, you know?
Yeah.
And where, you know, in 100 years from now, are people going to be looking at this time frame and going, if only they wouldn't have allowed the state to interfere in this area, you know, what would that have brought about? Because right now, we've got the what ifs out there.
Yeah.
You know, what if we did this? What if we did that? What if we promoted this instead of that? And, you know, we have all of the possibilities open right now.
Yeah.
And the state is going to narrow it down to whatever area they want.
Yeah.
And they're going to only promote that one specific way that the ideas can flow. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we're going to lose right now innovations that could have happened because the state's going to stop it. And, you know, maybe in another 100 years, those innovations will happen again. Because, again, the human mind has to figure out the puzzle.
Right.
And if the puzzle is the state locking down on those innovations, you know, it may take 100 years, but humans will figure out a way to get around the state to make those innovations happen.
Yep. Some basement, some garage, something will take place. There will be a Steve Jobs somewhere. That's a really good note to end the podcast on, because that's a really thing to think about. I mean, this is a serious topic to put some thought on, to look around you right now and think, you know, the government's trying its best to crack down on the freedom of information that's in the internet. And if we let that happen, what are we killing? What kind of liberties are we throwing away for not only, not for this generation, but for next and the next 2-3 generations down the road? What, by allowing the Federal Reserve in 1913, look at what our forefathers gave us. Had they just stopped it then, what would we be like now? And so you look at the same thing and you say, if we let go of internet freedom now, what will our children and our grandchildren have to suffer?
Yeah, because, I mean, that's, you know, this is what our generation is giving to the future.
Yeah.
Is this amazing wealth of communication and information.
Yeah.
And it's being threatened.
Yeah.
It's being attacked. And, you know, honestly, right now, you know, people occupy Wall Street and we have fascism and we have, you know, the Federal Reserve is messing with our money. I don't care. I don't care. That's already happening. It's already going to happen. That's going to take place.
Yeah.
But we have the internet right now.
Yeah.
We have the internet that's free, and it has information, and it has ways to talk to each other, and it has ways to know what the state is doing, and that's under attack. And we have that. And it is way easier to keep control of something than it is to take back control of something.
And if we can get certain aspects of people on the internet to understand the threat that they're facing, then we can figure out how to do entirely private internets. Private, I'm talking about away from government control, so that we can...
Because we know it better.
Yeah.
We know it better than the government does right now.
Yeah,
right
go now, to IRS.com and, and find out. Or, it's not .com, it's .gov. But go to the government websites stink.
Yeah, they really do. Because they don't know about this tool. You know, the Federal Reserve and money, and they know all about that. They know all the tricks. They know how to make that work.
Yeah.
But they don't know about the internet. They don't know how it works. They are not proficient in the internet. And we
it's not
are.
Like a dump truck. It's more like a series of tubes.
We have a population that knows more about the internet than we know anything else. Mm-hmm. You know? There are kids out there that know how to hack into other people's computer and do all of these crazy things, and they don't know how to do laundry.
Yeah. We need a black market internet. We need an untouchable black market internet. We need a black market internet. We need a black market banking system. We need a black market real estate exchange. Mm-hmm. We need a black market.
I think, and it may be happening, you know, somebody may have figured it out. I think we need to figure out a way to broadcast data over radio waves.
There are ways it can be done.
Because, I mean, I know it's slow and I know it's clunky, but when you're broadcasting over radio waves, that's really unstoppable.
Yeah. You can go with digital format, and it's a lot better than the old analog, and it speeds that up. We have to end it on that because we're running out of time. But,
right.
But we have to do this. We have to do these things. And I can't do it. I don't have the ability. I'm just, you know, a brain-numb guy sitting in a no-longer basement. But these things have to be done. We have to encourage the next generation, the innovators, to do this stuff. The current...
And not to talk about it.
Right.
You know, don't go out and protest and say, hey, look at me, look at me, look at me. Just shut up and figure out a way to make it to where they can't see you.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Well,
We didn't talk about spiders.
We didn't. We're going to have to do a spider podcast. Okay. Thanks a lot, folks, for listening to BadQuaker.com podcast. Be sure and check us out at BadQuaker.com. Send us an email. I'm Ben at BadQuaker.com.
And I'm Kai, K-I, at BadQuaker.com.
Thanks a lot, folks. Keep listening. Thank you.